It takes more than searching the internet for a solution to your problem, only to find your old blog post outlining the solution to your problem to be a great engineer. This is Soft Skills Engineering, episode 399. I'm your host, Dave Smith.
I'm your host, Jameson Dance.
Soft Skills Engineering is a weekly advice podcast for software developers about all the non-technical stuff that goes into the technical craft of software blogging.
I feel like the modern iteration of this is you are in a chat session with a large language model,
yeah.
And it cites your own blog post back at you.
You ask it, what's the source for that? And it says your name.
Yeah. I saw some attacks on one of the early Microsoft ones, I think before they even partnered with OpenAI, that someone tweeted something and then somehow used that to inject into the LLM. Like, what do you know about this person? And it sort of repeated back some stuff they tweeted, or I don't know. I'll have to dig that up. But they continued to be delightful.
Yes. Delightful and interestingly manipulable. Manipulatable.
Yes. Like us.
Yeah. Like real humans.
Isn't that what artificial general intelligence really is about? Making it so you can manipulate it just like you can a person.
It's just faster.
Prompt injection. Don't you mean gaslighting? This episode is sponsored by WorkOS, which is a great way to do single sign-on and a bunch of other awesome stuff for your app. You can hear more about them later.
All right. Would you like me to thank our patrons?
Yes, please.
Big shout out to this illustrious crew that are donating so much that they get shouted out every week. They are Dan from Drone Deploy, Chase W. Norton, TypeHero.dev, Never Is Not Just a Crater on Mars, Flamingo Emoji, I Like Chicken, I Like Liver, Meowmix, Meowmix, Please Deliver, Trash Panda, TheComputerScienceBook.com, Valentin at Datafold, Santa Hobart, Kent C. Dodds, Jenny Kim, Owen Chartle, Craig Motland, The Stochastic Parrot, Patreon.com, We're Hiring, Ira Chan, Question Mark, Jonathan King, WebTow, Awesome End-to-End Testing, The Unsettling Nature of Not Knowing the Content, and WilliamAngel.net, Travis, Braden Keynes, John Grant, and Cody Sale. To join this illustrious crew, go to softskills.audio and click the Support Us on Patreon button, where any contribution you make will get you access to our Slack community at the start of each month, which it is now, at the time we're recording this, time to go generate some invites. And if you contribute enough, we'll say your name on the show or whatever you can type into the Patreon field.
Indeed. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. On to the questions.
All right. Shall I read the first one?
You know, I would love it if you did.
Okay. This comes from Jim, who says, I am currently a senior software engineer in a well-funded but not profitable yet startup. I am highly effective and well-regarded to the point where the tech lead also comes to me with questions and always takes my technical input on board. I also get along very well with the rest of the team and with my manager. I am confident that I am in a good position to bargain for a decent pay bump. However, there's a chance I might be asking for pay that exceeds the salary of the tech leads or my manager. Would it be a hard no from the start if that's the case? Do you know of situations where certain people were paid higher than someone from a higher position? Thank you. I am loving the show.
This has an Office reference. There's an episode of The Office where someone asks Michael for a raise and he says, there's no way. This is more than I make. And then the employee that wants a raise goes to try and get Michael a raise so that he can get a raise.
That is extreme ownership. Am I right?
Yeah. So be prepared to negotiate for your boss's salary as well, I guess.
That would be so funny.
Yeah. I think it's a trend, but not a rule, that generally subordinates are lower paid than their bosses, in software at least. But I've definitely seen ICs get paid more than their managers.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually if they're very senior, very experienced. And in the cases I saw it, the manager was pumped to have that person on their team.
Yeah.
Sure, there could be some ego with it in some places where, like, well, I can't pay them that much. That's more than I make. But in these cases, they were good on both sides. The manager was good, the employee was good, and it went fine.
Yeah.
If it was just like a rando, I don't know, kind of mid-level team member, though, then that's probably tougher. Because I've seen this trend as well of trying to have sort of equivalent comp scales at equivalent levels on the IC and management track.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way that this could be fine or achievable, is if maybe your manager is an M4 and you're getting promoted to an S4, where it's like manager or software engineer 4 or something, or even an S5. I guess you could have that. Make those numbers as high as you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a hard and a fast rule. It also probably depends on how they're feeling about their compensation.
Yeah.
I think there is some truth to that. If they're not pumped about their compensation, it's going to be weird.
Well,
they feel they're underpaid.
I don't think it'll be weird. I mean, I'm just thinking about how I would respond to the situation. If I had a team member who reported to me as their manager, and they came to me and asked for a raise and justified it and had a reasonable, it was a reasonable expectation, and it was more than I made, well, I know exactly what I would do with that. I would take that information to my boss and say, I need a raise. So it's like, sometimes we struggle to negotiate new salaries because we don't have good comparable data points for other people's salaries to say, I should make this much because, I'm doing as much value, I'm producing as much value as that person, or on the market, I'm worth this much because I can have these three data points to compare. Well, you just gave your manager a gift of a free data point.
Is there a downside to doing this? I'm just wondering why would you not want to just say, here's what I would like, even if I suspect that is more than you make?
I can't think of a downside, but it would be really funny if it plays out like Michael Scott at The Office.
Yes.
The managers have a strong incentive not to respond. Like, they really want to keep a poker face because they say, if they reveal you make more than them, it's embarrassing, right? It's like, oh, no. I don't know. Yeah. But, probably if they did say no on the grounds, in my opinion, silly grounds, that they can't have anyone reporting to them making more than them, then I think that would be a really crappy outcome. But you may never know that was the reason.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes we talk about how we haven't really worked anywhere terrible or toxic. There's got to be some way that this can bite you if you work in an awful place.
For sure.
I think I'm failing to imagine that because I haven't worked in anywhere really that bad.
You have a remarkable lack of trauma from your employment history.
I think that's a good way to put it. I have been lucky.
You absolutely have. And I have too. I've lived a very charmed professional life of the last 20 years. I've had generally good bosses, almost no abuse. I was trying to think of a joke where I could say the most abuse I've had came from Jameson, but it's just impossible to even joke about. Yeah, so undoubtedly there are conniving, evil people who will make this bad for you, but I can't see how that could happen. And I think if people are willing to set their ego aside a little bit and let the paycheck size govern their behavior, they could definitely take advantage of this situation and say, hey, so-and-so on my team wants a raise. They definitely deserve it. It made me realize I'm also probably due for one as well.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, I have participated in multiple engineering organizations where I had access to pay information about multiple levels of management, including myself, a layer of managers who report to me, a layer of managers who report to them, and people who report to them. And I saw many instances of people who report upward making more money than the people that they report to. I wouldn't say it was the norm. Like 80% of the time, probably, people made less than their bosses. But 20% of the time, they made more. And I think in software engineering, that is especially common because the skill of engineering management and the skill of software development as an individual contributor are sometimes orthogonal skill sets, and they can be valued independently as a result of that. And moving one up doesn't mean the other has to move up.
Yeah. I think there's some truth to that. You definitely want a manager who is technical. I think that's generally better.
I agree.
But you don't necessarily have to be, you don't have to climb the mountain of your team and defeat them all in whiteboard combat.
Whiteboard architecture combat.
Yeah. If your job is to make these expensive divas more productive, you kind of, your support staff.
Expensive divas. You're like the groupie or the...
You're the roadie.
Look, you're not Taylor Swift. You're the one that sets up Taylor Swift's stage.
Yeah. And they make less than Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Get out of here. I'm about to release the top album via this pull request. Yeah.
In fact, I guarantee you Taylor Swift makes more than Taylor Swift's manager.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a funny thing to
I
think
hope
about.
So.
Of course, in that context, manager has a slightly different meaning, but she probably has a whole team of managers. And I bet you she makes she out earns all of them.
It'd be weird if she didn't.
It would
Listen,
be.
If you don't, I'm willing to do it for less than I'll change that. I'll do their jobs and you'll be able to make more money than I do.
Right. I'll do my job
what they
for
do.
Less. I love it. Yeah, so personally, I don't have any concern with this. I would not allow this to hold you back or slow you down from making this request. I would just go do it. And you got about 398 episodes of Soft Skills Engineering you need to go listen to pluck out the gems of salary negotiation advice that we've given out over the years. I don't know which ones are the ones that you need, but I know that if you listen to all of them, you'll get what you need.
I know which ones are the ones you need, but I'm not going to tell you because I want you to listen to all of them. We've also cleverly hidden some bad advice to make sure that you're listening carefully. So you got to listen closely enough. Yes.
Yes. And then we call it out in the episode errata. You know, at the end of each episode, we have a little call out.
It's a tiny little asterisk.
Mm-hmm. Jameson, I can count on zero hands the number of times I've been glad that my dev team rolled their own SSO system.
Yeah, it's one of those things that seems straightforward, and then you start hearing more acronyms and more concepts and OAuth and OIDC and SAML and SCIM and a bunch of other stuff, and then you find out about new acronyms when stuff's on fire.
Exactly. This is where WorkOS comes in. WorkOS makes it easy for developers to add SSO to their app rather than building it from scratch yourselves, like I have mistakenly done. WorkOS has excellent, inspiring levels of good documentation. They have their own login UI they've created called AuthKit, which looks really beautiful. And frankly, I wish my company website looked that good. And they have example apps in 9 different languages, including Node.js, Python, PHP, and even Go.
WorkOS is a drop-in replacement for Auth0, and it gives you great pricing. You get 1 million monthly active users for free. Also, I have personal experience with WorkOS. I actually use them at my current job. I know some of the folks over there. And the stuff Dave said is true. Really easy to use, great docs, excellent support. No complaints about them. I don't know. I don't know if that's a strong enough endorsement. They're all right. No complaints. No, WorkOS is great. I like them. I liked them before they sponsored us.
Yeah. Great. Listen, don't punish your future self by building a homegrown SSO system or locking into a multi-year contract with some legacy vendor with opaque pricing and low usage caps. Join the growing list of companies that are using WorkOS today, like Vercel, Webflow, and Loom. Check it out at workos.com/softskills.
That is workos.com/softskills. All right. Should I read our next question?
Yes.
This is from Bobby Table's dad. Father Tables.
Yes.
I did it. I crossed over. I've been a software engineer for nearly 25 years. I worked my way from junior to senior staff to principal, and for the last 6 years, I've been a technical architect. I've been very deliberate in my career path and told myself I would always be on the technical side of the wall rather than the managerial side. Most of my bosses over the years have been formerly technical folks that just seemed to have stepped off the technology train at some point. Maybe they couldn't keep pace with the rapid changes in their old age, or maybe they didn't like IC work, who knows? But I always had this feeling about them, like, they just don't get it anymore, or their technical knowledge is so outdated, how can they make good decisions? Much like a teenager looks at their parents who stepped off the fashion train many years prior, and now doesn't want to be seen in public with them.
Yeah.
Well, I just accepted a job leading a team with headcount and a budget in the works. It's not the role I really wanted, but in this market, I didn't have a ton of choices. It's billed as a sort of hybrid architect slash manager role, but it feels like I've crossed a threshold. I feel like my future will be that of a retired racehorse living out the last of his days in the middle management pasture. So two questions. What can I do to not become a hollowed out shell of myself as the technology train eventually starts to outpace me and eventually speed away at ludicrous speed because I'm not, quote, doing it every day? And two, is it just the inevitable way for every software engineer? I mean, I don't see a lot of 70-year-old coders, so this is normal, right?
Oh, great questions. 25 years of avoiding management ended.
Oh, they got you.
Gotcha.
Had a good run. Got you in the end.
You'll never know what it feels like to go 30 years without going into management.
Yeah, that's true. But Dave, will you know 25 years without going into management?
No, I won't.
don't think I will.
Yeah, too late.
I don't know. Maybe I will.
Well, I guess you could always bounce back and accumulate a total of 25 years. That would be challenging.
You know, 25 consecutive years at the beginning of your career?
Nope.
No. That opportunity is also lost.
Yes.
We all make choices.
Yes, we do. Goodness gracious.
How do I not become a hollowed out shell of myself?
Well, one of the really cool things about management is you can kind of do whatever you want in a way that you didn't. In other words, you have a level of freedom that you've never had before. And you have the freedom to delegate things you don't want to do more so than you have had in the past. You have the freedom to keep certain jobs to yourself more so than you had in the past. And you can really, you really can, and I think should, play job craft your management role to your strengths. And I think in this case, the strengths are, first of all, very well-written soft skills engineering questions. This one was just excellent. A real doozy.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, though, you got 25 years of individual contributor and technical leadership. Lean into that. Boy, this is going to be fantastic, Mr. Tables. I think I have always been envious of engineers who have a team lead who is their people manager, but also is highly technical. I don't know. That's just a dream.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that you can job craft. You definitely have more or often wider responsibilities mm-hmm. to also accompany the increased freedom. And
more meetings.
Yeah, more meetings for sure that will eat up your learn new technologies time. I think you need to be more targeted if you want to do it at work, where you have explicit areas of focus. Like, I have a problem to solve, so I'm going to go learn about this thing. Where I remember as an IC, I would play around a lot more at work of like, I wonder if this is any good, and kind of go poke at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a bit harder to do. I guess I'm describing a style. You can maybe still do that. But what I'm describing is my style, which is the best one, obviously.
Obviously, it got you here.
I hear about a lot of stuff, and I talk to the team about it, and then I dive into a specific thing and try to go deep on that thing. But being around a team helps me feel like I get some broad exposure to technology still.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel like I'm picking up new technical skills, maybe not at the same rate, but and some things are atrophying, but I can use this limited time in a way that still feels effective. I'm not grazing as much.
Yeah.
And that still feels fine for me.
Must be fine for everyone then.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not, quote, doing it every day. It depends on how big the team is too. I mean, it's a trap to ignore important leadership and manager things in order to code. But if your team really needs the help and you don't have pressing, urgent, non-coding things to do, you can still make time to code and make that part of your job.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, just this week, you know, I have a lot of managerial duties. You know, I'm a member of an executive team. I've got tons of stuff I have to do, like, I got a board meeting to prepare for, investor reports to write, and all kinds of things that take my time. But this week, I decided to carve out some time and actually do a coding task. And it's been fun. It's been great. And it forced me to learn some parts of the system that I was not acquainted with as much. So now I have newfound knowledge. And I encourage all managers to do that, even if you're, like me, really occupied with non-technical tasks. And I think in this case, you've got 25 years of consecutive technical development skill that I think would make this really easy for you to do. In fact, I would suggest that the challenge here will be to not do too much of that, you know, because it'll be the comfortable thing.
Yeah. You also get to use those skills to give feedback and critique on designs. Maybe you're not the one doing the technical designing anymore if you're managing the team. If you're an architect slash manager, maybe you're still doing some of that, I guess. But I think you still flex some of those muscles when you give feedback on designs that other people have produced.
Yeah.
And I think that can be an effective thing for a manager, especially a technical manager, to do.
Totally. And what I have found is that even if you're not hyper familiar with some of the technologies or newfangled frameworks that are being used, these architectural principles tend to, what's the word, transcend the technical nitty-gritty details. And I have found that even for things I'm not super familiar with, I can call out important issues and I'm usually right. I in other words, I can bring value to some of these architectural discussions. And I think in this person's case, that'll definitely be the case. So don't, and so my specific advice is, don't disconnect from that. Your team needs you to provide that value to them. But at the same time, you got to also balance that you may have team members on your team who are charged with that responsibility, and you don't want to step on their toes. So depending on the composition of your team, you may or may not need to lean more or less into these various areas. So writing code, doing architectural reviews, doing code review. So you got to be really delicate about that, or not delicate, but deliberate about what you, which of those areas you lean more into based on how much you want your team members to grow into it.
I'm looking at the second question now too. Is this just inevitable for every software engineer? I mean, I don't see a lot of 7-year-old coders, so this is normal, right? I think yes. I do think there is some ageism in tech where if you are kind of like 50 plus, maybe as I get older, that number will kind of increase be like 20 years older than I am.
Yeah.
That's how old is that's when the ageism kicks in.
Right.
But I think you do start to get some raised eyebrows and like, well, why aren't you in a leadership role, or are you really going to fit in this IC role? We're some hot new startup disrupting the kombucha world or whatever. And I don't know. So I think that's a legitimate practical concern of like, I expect it would be harder. You'd be, there are less places, there are more places that might filter you out, whether that's legal or not, because of your age.
Yeah,
because people expect this pattern of you kind of just move into leadership. But I don't know. John Carmack still writes a lot of code.
Yeah, the numbers, it's interesting. Sometimes I try to think, what are the ratios of engineering management to engineers? And I think, okay, you know, anywhere from 4 or 5 to 10 engineers to 1 engineering manager, right? That's the range I tend to see. And then, of course, you've got more engineering managers who those engineering managers report to. And ultimately, the ratios get pretty big. It could be hundreds of engineers being led by one person at the top of a pyramid-shaped thing that's actually more like a couple of parabolas coming out from the point, and not so much like straight lines. But the point I'm trying to make is that I'm not totally sure if mathematically this is necessary. Or what's happening to these people? Because when I got into...
Where do they go?
Yeah, exactly. Because when I got into software development, I remember looking around and thinking, all the people I know who are in my reporting hierarchy are not software developers. And this was 20 plus years ago, and part of that was because of my industry. I was not so much in an industry that had been, I don't know, like inherited by software developers. But in part, I think it was because there were just far fewer of us software developers at the time. But in the ensuing 20 years since I started, there's now a lot of people who did software development for some number of years, you know, something pretty material like 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, who are now ready to move into management just because, you know, maybe they're interested in it. And now they've accumulated enough life experience to be good at it. But then I think about the vast, vast population of people who have joined the industry since I started 20 years ago. And for a while there, maybe not in the last year or two, but for a while there, it just felt like there were twice as many new software engineers every year than there were the previous year. So
yeah,
I think with that kind of dynamic where you just have this influx, almost exponential growth year over year, probably realistically was not exponential, but with that kind of huge growth, you get a lot of pressure among the more senior people to go and be the leadership layer for these growing people. And so I think the numbers do support it. I think it's like after 20 years in the industry, I think that there's just so much demand for you to be a software engineering leader of some kind.
Oh, okay. So you're saying like it's like the upswelling of newer people sort of kind of pushing you up to a leadership role
exactly.
In some ways.
Because I mean, think about if the each generation of new engineers is twice as populous as the previous generation. You know, you got 100 the first year, then 200 come in. Now you got a total of 300. Then the next year you got 400. Now you got a total of 700. You know, the next year you got 800 coming in. Now you got a total of 1500. And it's like, okay, that was just 4 or 5 years. So who's going to lead all these people? You know, it's like, well, that first generation is now, after 4 or 5 years, that first generation could be a full management layer for the other 1500 people. You know? So like it just works out. Now I know that's not actually what we're doing. We're not software engineers are despite the rumors, we don't grow like bacteria. You know, we grow sub-exponentially.
Yeah.
But I think still the numbers work out to where, you know, anyone who's been in the industry for over 10 years at this point, there are enough people who have been in the industry less than 10 years that the ratios work out that you could have, you know, maybe a good half to 80% of those 10-year plus people be in management.
I think some of this is also, I'm thinking about myself today and say I dropped myself into my first software job. Hopefully I'm better at it now than I would have been then, but I feel like I would get sucked into some kind of leadership role because I just know stuff that would maybe scale more. So some of it is also, I think I'm making the same argument you made that, well, am I? No, I think it's a little bit different. I think what I'm saying is you see a lot as you get more experience, you learn a lot of stuff. And at some point, there's this tipping point where the value of you doing things yourself becomes less than the value of you using that experience to help other people do stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's two ways that can happen, right? Like, either you're really good at helping other
you
people
get better
do good stuff.
At something or worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're just so much slower. I like to believe that's why I went into management.
Yeah, I couldn't hack it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't keep up with the blistering pace of... I feel like I did kind of make the transition at the height of the JavaScript fatigue era, though.
Mm.
Maybe that was it. That's definitely slowed down.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's more fatigue, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, now there's everything fatigue, because I'm old and tired. I have old age fatigue.
Yes, right. Wait a minute. You're 10 years younger than me.
Well, how horrible must you feel then?
I feel great.
I bet you could defeat me in a physical contest pretty soundly.
Do you think?
I think so. You do physical activity more than I have recently.
Well, I have been lifting weights this winter.
Cave slug. Yeah, I've been cultivating mass this winter.
Cultivating. Well done. You've been on a 6-month bulk. That's what my teenage son would say.
Yes. 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 Very dirty bulk. Yeah. Where you don't do any exercise.
Right.
And you eat whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, have we answered this question? I don't know if we answered it.
I think so. Yeah, I think we did. I think we answered it.
All right.
I think you'll do well at it.
Yeah. You will not become a hollowed out shell of yourself. I think Jameson and I have done enough years in management that we can say with some amount of authority that if you want to stay connected to the technology train, you can.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know, Jameson, if this feels like it to you, but I feel like the technology train is actually moving more slowly now. You know, the breakneck speed of like a whole new language you have to learn, a whole new framework you have to learn, a whole new paradigm for containerization you have to learn. Like these things are the period with which these things hit the market and cause everyone to lose their minds and adopt them is increasing, I think. Like we're kind of settling in on a way of doing some things. I mean, it's not to say there isn't some disruption here and there, but by and large, the technology skills that I had 10 years ago are still very valuable today, even though, you know, it's like, oh, well, we don't have Phillips head screwdrivers anymore. We have these Torx heads. And I'm like, well, still a screwdriver, still turns clockwise, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey. You know, it's like not, I'm able to adapt is what I'm saying really quickly to new technologies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can do it.
Makes sense.
You can do it. Don't worry. The industry's slowing down with you. Also, you can help slow down the industry. By the way, you're in a management role now, so you can veto any new technology that you don't think you want to have to learn.
That's true.
Kubernetes.
How do you relax that pace?
Yeah.
Who has time for that?
No, we're not doing that. I evaluated it and I found it to be insufficient for our needs.
Yes. Not that I didn't understand it.
Right. It wasn't.
But I swear I did. I understood it very well. Yes. So well that I see its deep inherent flaws.
And I could try to explain it to you, but it's something you'll maybe in 25 years when you've had as much experience as I have, you can understand.
Yes. All right. Now we've answered it.
Good luck.
I believe. Yes. Good luck. What should we do if people want their own questions answered, Dave? What should they do? I mean, I know what we're... Yeah, we keep doing this.
Yeah, what we do...
What do they do?
We answer the questions. What you should do is go to softskills.audio and click the Ask Us a Question button, where you can submit a little form that we have. It's on a technology called a web page, part of the World Wide Web, in case that wasn't clear. This is a new technology that we've recently adopted because we're both in management now, and we figured it was time to catch up with the technology train.
We're only on Web 2.0, right, though. We're trying to stay one major version behind.
Honestly, our website is more like Web 1.0, let's be honest. There's not really much going on in the Web 2.0 for us.
It's vintage.
Yeah, it is vintage. Anyway, thank you so much to everyone who fills out that form each week. We love reading your questions. You keep us going.
We really appreciate it. All right, we'll catch you next week.